as I started praying for who to invite to Skyfall to be a speaker, I waited for the Lord to direct me, and it just kept on saying, invite Chad. And in fact, I kind of delayed for a little bit because I was just doing other things and busy, and the Lord just kept reminding me. So you're supposed to be here, brother, and we're glad to have him. So everybody, give Chad Riley a hand of applause there.
How's everybody doing today? Good deal. Ted wanted me to ask three questions, so if y'all just want to raise your hands, I'm going to go ahead and take care of this. Have any of you ever experienced sleep paralysis? Okay. Have any of you ever seen a UFO or an orb? And lastly, has anybody in here been abducted? All right, so we got that taken care of now. All right. Make sure this is on. All right, Stranger Things, a Netflix series, is based on the Montauk Project that ran from 1971 to 1983 at Camp Hero Air Force Base in New York City. Or a facility in New York, I should say. I'm not sure if any of y'all are familiar with Russ Dizdar and his research, The Black Awakening. If you are, then you probably already know this. But they are trying to shatter the psyche of the individual in order to open them up to demonic possession. And he talked about that with the satanic ritual abuse, where they would take children. And sometimes they would have a tub full of hot water, another tub with ice water, and they would literally pick them up and just drop them in one tub. And after so many times going back and forth, their minds just literally shattered. And the children at that facility, they were subjected to things I can't even talk about in this setting. So it's a very sad situation. But I know it's a popular TV show, but it is based on a true story. And they actually did psychologically torture as well as physical torture on these children. So, and Elle, or 11 as she's known on the show, the whole thing about the remote viewing program is that they were literally tapping into demonic and satanic powers. They started out wanting to be able to access information, but it eventually morphed into something else, and they got into creating psychic assassins, just like in the TV show, which is what they were trying to do to the children. And sorry, just a little bit nervous. I've never done a talk like this before, so thank you. So I know some of you guys out there probably know who Aleister Crowley is, and his "Do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." This is one of his most famous quotes right here, is that 11 is their number of the magician. So that's why they incorporated into everything, not just numerology and gematria, things like that, but they also, the amount of words that they're using. So, "do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law," 11 words. And then, it's the 23-year history of the military remote viewing program. It was originally started out as Scan-8, then it morphed into Gondola Wish, then it became Grill Flame, then Center Flame, then Dragoon Absorb, Project CF, Sunstreak, and eventually became Stargate. And it was used by a lot of different agencies, CIA, Army Intelligence, INSCOM, NSA, DIA, which is the Defense Intelligence Agency. So I know a lot of people have heard of remote viewing. It's a very real thing. In fact, the characters talked about on Stranger Things is there was a gentleman by the name of Joseph McConnell, who is actually designation 001, and Mel Riley was actually designation 011. So, I mean, the Duffer Brothers, when they wrote the script for that, and it was originally called the Montauk Project, they were forced to change the name in order to get it picked up by Netflix. So a lot of people are not quite aware of that either. So Operation Often, under the guise of the Scientific Engineering Institute, funded a course in sorcery at the University of South Carolina in the early 1970s. And Operation Often, also known as MK Often, was a CIA-initiated project to test the effects of certain drugs on humans. The program also involved the study of black magic, and the CIA participated in seances and closely studied other types of occult rituals. And I'm sure most of y'all probably heard of Project Paperclip. So that's when they brought over 1,600 Nazis after World War II, and a vast majority of them were absorbed into the CIA, which originally was the OSS, and the remaining few went into NASA. And also, back in 2016, on March 18th, they actually discovered a secret stash of Himmler's library. And when the Nazis were going around conquering all these territories, they would go into Masonic lodges, and they were taking all the esoteric and occult books and amassing them for their research. In fact, whenever the Annenerbe were traveling around the world looking into a lot of the Blavatsky teachings, and they were looking for the Vedas so that they could look for an entrance into the Hollow Earth. So these people were tapping into demonic and supernatural things, and they knew it. And here we got Helena Blavatsky and her Secret Doctrine, Volume 2, Stanzas of the Dizion, and Stanza 11. They built great images 9 yadis high, the size of their bodies. A yadi is a measurement said to correspond to our yard, making the Atlanteans 27 feet tall and directly tying them in with Genesis 6. And these are some of the clients who utilized the remote viewing program. As you can see, we got the CIA, NSA, DEA, the Joint Chief of Staff, Secret Service, U.S. Coast Guard, and even Homeland Security. And the total cost of the program was $20 million, which was minuscule. In the Persian Gulf War, remote viewers saved the government $240 million alone by finding lost Scud missiles. So the Stargate project was obviously a success, not just scientifically and financially, but even operationally. And Hal Puthoff, who is one of the gentlemen that was originally part of the SRI program at Stanford Research Institute, this is one of his quotes from 1996. He wrote, "One group declined to get involved because the whole concept was deemed unscientific nonsense, while a second group declined because, even though it might be real, it was possibly demonic. And a third group had to be found." And here I've got a video of Comb Kelleher.
It is not only Skinwalker Ranch. It is not sort of only happening on Skinwalker Ranch, but a lot of UFO activity does seem to give rise to the Skinwalker or the hitchhiker effect. For people who have never been on Skinwalker Ranch and just interact with the UFO phenomenon, they themselves, in some cases, I'm not saying in all cases, but in some cases, and mostly where we have the luxury of being able to study these people over many months or many years, a lot of these people, report elements of the hitchhiker effect. You know, it's kind of ironic, but going all the way back to 1947, Kenneth Arnold, when he saw those 9 objects in the sky over the Cascade Mountains in June of 1947. It's interesting, long after he died, his daughter went on a radio show. She was talking about writing a book about his life, but she started talking about seeing orbs in the Arnold home. Experienced various poltergeist effects. Even Kenneth Arnold himself in his book talks about, some really weird happenings that were happening after the June 24th, 1947.
So as you can see here, the hitchhiker phenomenon that any of you who have done research into Skinwalker Ranch are fully aware of, that it is not just tied to Skinwalker Ranch. It is also seen by people who have encounters with UFOs and aliens as well. And not just that, but the very first people that my research has led me to look at, the first ones to encounter the hitchhiker phenomenon was actually the remote viewers in the remote viewing program. So I'm seeing a pattern here that this is all interconnected and that this is all totally demonic. So some of the first people to encounter the hitchhiker effect were the early pioneers of the remote viewing. This is a very interesting nugget of information I stumbled upon. In fact, one of the earliest encounters of the hitchhiker phenomenon was Kenneth Arnold, who encountered the 9 craft flying past Mount Rainier, Washington in 1947. Here we see, and my research has led me to look into this area over here, not just for Skinwalker Ranch, but there are 4 other ranches as well that are all paranormal. So you got Blind Frog Ranch, you have Moonshadow Ranch, Skinwalker Ranch, Bradshaw Ranch, and Stardust Ranch. And they all seem to fall on a straight line. Well, I don't know if that's a ley line or exactly what the deal is, but I just found that rather interesting that you got 5 big paranormal hotspots all falling on a straight line. And concerning the Skinwalker Ranch in the Uinta Basin region, strange things have been seen overhead since the first European explorers arrived. In fact, Silvestre Velez de Escalante, a Franciscan missionary in El Rey, wrote of strange fireballs appearing over his campfire in 1776, which is the same year that America declared its independence, as well as the Bavarian Illuminati was also founded on May 1st, 1776. Then we got in the 1960s and the 1970s, in the Uinta area basin, reports of UFOs were so common that they just stopped recording them. Okay, and in a 1996, a newspaper article which mentioned the UFO incidents in and around caught the attention of Las Vegas businessman Robert Bigelow, who flew to Utah and met with the Shermans and purchased the property. The rancher, Terry, and his wife, Gwen, and the 2 teenage children told Bigelow that the UFO sightings were only a small part of the phenomenon that had terrified the family for 20 months since buying the home. They were psychologically tormented and physically intimidated by a bizarre range of paranormal phenomenon. A calf was stripped of all of its flesh and blood in broad daylight in total silence while the rancher and his wife were yards away in the same pasture. They also had 4 of their prized large bulls were somehow moved out of a corral and into a cramped tool shed with the only door leading into the shed had not even been opened. And here's a interview between George Knapp and Robert Bigelow. He said that I was very disturbed toward the end because of something that happened. Some of the government people, Bigelow said in an interview with Knapp in 2021, everybody took things home with them. I took things home to my house. Things happened to my wife and to me. Everybody took things home. We all did, but we didn't know it was going to be kind of permanent. We didn't know that this was going to stay with us for years or possibly for the rest of our life. Who knows? And it's not that it happened on the ranch. It was when they left the ranch. I do say hitchhikers, and these are government people, and it affected them in a very dramatic way. Very dramatic way. And now I'm going to play a clip of Travis Taylor. I don't know if any of you are watching the series on Secret of Skinwalker, but he is one of the people that is on the TV show, and I have him in his own words saying why Robert Bigelow sold the ranch.
Bigelow era. In fact, I know who coined the term hitchhiker, but he hasn't told me it's okay for me to say that yet, but attach a statement yet. It's basically Axelrod in that book.
Oh.
So I know Axelrod very well. And all that stuff is, I've measured with scientific instruments in his house. It is freaky. We've had simultaneous events occur at his house, my house, and in a house in the Uinta Basin.
Wow.
All at once, so we've measured. Within a microsecond, the events occurred, which, you know, that you think you can't do that. And but the worst phenomena is there have been a couple of people who had the, I guess you call them orbs, whatever, in their house.
Okay.
And or wraith-like things in their house.
Like
yeah. And one of the neighbors of Axelrod had an orb fly through them, and they ended up with a very dangerous form of cancer from it. I think she's still alive, but she's having to go through all sorts of chemo and radiation and treatments like that to try and keep from that. Now Bigelow, the reason he got rid of the place was he was convinced it killed his wife. And so I would call those pretty drastic hitchhiker phenomena.
Also have a video of Chris Marks, who worked security out at the ranch while Bigelow owned it. And he is going to discuss some of the esoteric and occult things they were getting into on the ranch. So this is what I'm saying, is that they are literally provoking these things. In fact, some of the things that I'm going to get into here shortly, I'm going to show a consistent pattern that the United States government and various branches have been doing satanic rituals and summoning these things.
Later on, we did a lot of meditation and got into somewhat of occult practices in order to communicate. And they did, yeah. We used Ouija. We used this was Bass designed.
My next question for you is, who was that? Something that you guys would develop as investigators, or told to do it?
We were told. We were basically what opened the door to it all. Was there was more and more of a push to use meditation for communication. So it would actually, before we actually even touched it, it would move. It actually lifted up. And this is, I know this sounds absolutely crazy, but it's actually, it has been videotaped from two different angles, which we had two different cameras set up, different angles, audio, the whole nine yards. It lifted up and basically punched me in the chest. This happened several times. And then I switched seats because I figured maybe there's some sort of magnetic interference or something. And so everywhere I sat around this table, I sat at all four chairs, this thing would actually jump at me and fall into my lap. A week-long experiment where I put offerings out into the East Valley. No, this sounds crazy. I also had a lot of, at that point, connections with some of the Ute tribal elders. And because I was just researching outside the box. I just wanted to see, obviously, the high-tech stuff didn't work. Mm-hmm. But if we could use something on a different wavelength, something different, alternate. And I still dealt with it from a scientific approach of an investigator. But so based up on suggestions from some of the elders, I put out meat, bread, and water in small bowls into the East Valley. It was interesting that it wasn't touched by anything for about 3 days. And after that, it was gone. And then things started happening. There were apparitions that started showing up. There were, you know, the Man on the Ridge story that happened thereafter. I mean, things started happening, and I can only imagine, I can only believe that it was those things that we started putting out there that set things in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Fugel was suggested to Bigelow and became the confidant that Fugel would take care of the ranch and be willing to invest in continuing former investigations. In an interview, he said, "I bought the property as a skeptic, as someone who had never seen a UFO or a ghost or an orb or anything of that sort," Fugel told an interviewer in 2021. Bringing something home, the infectious agent model. Most people who spent more than a day on Skinwalker Branch have brought something home from the property with them. The effect was almost universal, even during the NIDS days when Kelleher and Eric Davis spent hundreds of days or nights on watches out there at the ranch. In 1996 to 1999, their wives spoke of waking up at night and seeing people in their bedrooms or black shadows walking through the house. And that's the thing about the hitchhiker phenomenon. It's you just never know exactly what it is that you're going to get, as you'll see here shortly.
The one character in our book, Axelrod, not his real name. We had to change that at the direction of the Pentagon when we submitted the manuscript. He had this explosion of activity in his home that was seen by his wife. She saw this standing on two legs, a wolf creature, a wolf standing in her yard, its paws crossed like this, leaning on a tree, staring back at her. A couple of days later, she didn't tell anybody about it. A couple of days later, her kids see it. They scream. This thing runs off down the street. They can see it's running on two legs. It's kicking up leaves. And they didn't know what the hell to think about it.
So you just never know exactly what it is that's going to follow you back. Some have the people who have encountered the hitchhiker phenomenon talk about poltergeist activity. Some speak of seeing UFO craft. Some speak of seeing orbs inside their home. Some talk of cryptids, shadow people, you name it. So like I said, you just never know exactly what it is that you're going to get. So, and another thing about the hitchhiker phenomenon that was very interesting is that it actually spreads like a virus. So, like, say, if you were to go to the ranch and come back, it would attack your family, but it can also spread through other family members as well as neighbors and coworkers. And that was a very fascinating little bit of information. And here we got some of the top leading UFO researchers. Alan J. Hynek, who is part of Project Blue Book, and he is one of the top two leading ufologists on the planet. And even Hynek said here that he believed that these were from an astral plane. So you can say interdimensional, you can say heavenlies, demonic realm, whatever floats your boat. And then Jacques Vallée, who is the second leading ufologist, he wrote in his book, Confrontations, on page 13, often accompanied by sadistic sexual manipulation and reminiscent of the medieval tales of encounters with demons. In his book, on page 159, he wrote, UFOs can project images or fabricated scenes designed to change our belief system. Human belief is being controlled and conditioned. We may be headed toward a massive change of human attitudes towards paranormal abilities and extraterrestrial life. He also wrote that there is a spiritual component. The UFO phenomenon is controlled by a non-human sort of consciousness. And then John Keel, in his book Operation Trojan Horse, on page 183, wrote, "The endless messages from space people would now fill a library, and while the communications claim to represent some other world, the contents of those messages are identical to the messages long received by mediums and mystics. I do believe that the great bulk of these phenomena are what is called satanic." This is Gordon Creighton in an article entitled "Defense Chief Warns of Satanic UFOs." The Times of London religion correspondent Ruth Gledhill explains how Lord Hill Norton, a former admiral of the fleet, has helped to found a group of UFO concern, the purpose of which is to warn others that the satanic nature of some UFOs. Flying Saucer Review, Creighton more bluntly informed his readership that demons are here already in immense strength. And then John Keel in his book Operation Trojan Horse on page 192, "The devil and his demons can, according to the literature, manifest themselves in almost any form, can physically imitate anything from angels to horrifying monsters with glowing eyes. Strange objects and entities materialize and dematerialize in these stories. Just as the UFOs and their splendid occupants appear and disappear, walk through walls, and perform other supernatural feats. This is Hermann Oberth, who's one of the Nazis that came over under Project Paperclip. Him and Wernher von Braun both worked in rocket technology. In fact, Wernher von Braun, who was actually his under him, and he wrote, "Today we cannot produce machines that fly the same as UFOs do. They are flying by means of artificial fields of gravity. This would explain the sudden change of directions. This hypothesis would also explain the piling up of these discs into a cylindrical or cigar-shaped mothership upon leaving the Earth." So they knew quite a bit about the UFO phenomenon. And then here we have Whitley Strieber in his book, Transformation. "Increasingly, I felt as if I were entering a struggle that might even be more than life and death. It might be a struggle for my soul, my essence, or whatever part of might have reference to the eternal. These are the worst things in death, I suspected. So far, the word demon has never been spoken among the scientists and doctors who were working with me alone at night. I worried about the legendary cunning of demons. At the very least, I was going stark raving mad." And then he also wrote, "I wondered if I might not be in the grip of demons, if they were not making me suffer for their own purposes or simply for their enjoyment." And lastly, he wrote, "I felt an absolutely indescribable sense of menace. It was hell on earth to be there in the presence of these entities. And yet I couldn't move. I couldn't cry out. Couldn't get away. I'd lay still as death, suffering in inner agonies. Whatever was there seemed so monstrous, ugly, so filthy, and dark and sinister. Of course they were demons. They had to be. And they were here, and I couldn't get away." And an interesting side note, there's a researcher by the name of Joseph Jordan for CE4 Research. And one of the things that he uncovered, he used to work for MUFON, or still does, has worked with them for several decades. And he noticed a pattern that they know about that they didn't want to talk about, that these things flee in the name of Jesus. And so he had already uncovered about 400 something cases before I actually interviewed him on Deception Detection Radio. And when he came on there and talked to me, he told me he was almost up to 700 cases. So that's the thing. If these things are tracking across the galaxy, why do they flee in the name of Jesus? "The occultist is brought into intelligent communication with the spirits of the air and can receive any knowledge which they possess or any false impression that they choose to impart. The demons seem permitted to do various wonders at request." This is from G.H. Pember in Earth's Earliest Ages and their connection with the modern spiritualism and theosophy. "Studies of flying saucer cults repeatedly show that they are part of a larger occult social world." That's Stupel and McNeese. "UFO behavior is more akin to magic than to physics as we know it. The modern UFO nuts and the demons of past days are probably identical." That's Dr. Pierre Guerin. "How credible is it to think literally thousands of extraterrestrials would fly millions or billions of light years simply to teach New Age philosophy, deny Christianity, and support the occult?" That's John Ankerberg and John Weldon. "A large part of the available UFO literature is closely linked with the mysticism and the metaphysical. It deals with subjects like mental telepathy, automatic writing, and invisible entities, as well as phenomena like poltergeist, ghost manifestations, and possession. Many of the UFO reports now being published in the popular press recount alleged incidents that are strikingly similar to demonic possession and psychic phenomenon." And that's Lynn E. Coteau, who was part of the Air Force. "The battle with UFOs is not for the planet of man, but for the soul of man." This is what it's all about right here. And this is where the research is about to start to take a turn. Now this, from the Vatican, "There is an alien presence on Earth now. This is Monsignor Corradato Balducci. Here he is again. Extraterrestrial contact is a real phenomenon. The Vatican is receiving much information about the extraterrestrials and their contacts with humans from its nuncios embassies in various countries such as Mexico, Chile, and Venezuela. Very soon, we will not have to deny our Christian faith, but there is information coming from another world, and once it is confirmed, it is going to require a rereading of the gospel as we know it. This is Joseph McConnell that I was talking about, who worked for INSCOM. After SRI came out and they started the early remote viewing program, Army decided that they wanted to throw their hat in the ring. And he is designated 001. He was the best one that they had. And on here it says, on several occasions, remote viewers had their sessions interrupted on a particular target to describe a flying saucer that they perceived to be in the vicinity. During a session at Fort Meade in June 1980, Joe McConnell was targeted against a site somewhere in the world, but found his attention drawn to an object over the site. He perceived a flat disc-shaped metallic craft at an altitude of 14,000 feet. Its outer edges were rotating, and the thing seemed powered by some kind of plasma, a gas made of ionized atoms, and it was moving at 4,500 miles per hour. So yes, even the remote viewers were encountering UFOs, and when they were being targeted at certain locations, they would sometimes come face to face with these things. A similar event happened to Ingo Swann once while he was remote viewing a Soviet submarine, trying to determine its location. He described the sub, but then remarked that he saw something in the atmosphere above it, something that seemed to be shadowing the sub. What was it? Asked Puthoff. Swann shrugged and sketched a flying saucer. Accidental results like these led Puthoff and other officials and Bob Monroe to specifically target remote viewers against UFO incidents. McConnell, going down into his zone to find what he believed would be some sort of operational target, was often surprised to find himself looking around the cramped, curved interior of an alien ship filled with skinny, large-eyed humanoids who often stared back at him, wondering what the heck he was doing there. Pat Price had also done a great many UFO-related targets and had even ventured out into spontaneously in nightly reveries to spy on flying saucers as they cruised in and out of the Alaskan mountains, in other words, the Alaskan Triangle. But Ingo Swann, asked by Puthoff if he would try to confirm some of Price's results, almost always refused. His argument was the UFO occupants, if they sensed him spying on them, would swoop down and spy on him, invading his mind and possessing his soul. Tammy Stone of Waco, Texas, spoke with the Air Force about her nightmares, and they expressed deep concern that a number of abductees were discreetly approached and had told similar apocalyptic stories that they had concluded that the aliens were deceptive, demonic, and their origin was connected with the demonic realm and the afterlife. The creatures derived something from the human souls, and they believe they held since the late, or it's a belief that they held since the 1960s and the 1970s. So the U.S. government knows that they are coming here. They know that they are coming from another dimension, and they also know that they have a fascination with the human soul. Senior figures within the U.S. intelligence community were convinced that aliens were manipulating and infiltrating human society. Some within the military even speculated that the aliens were kidnapping and programming people for a specific future task to be undertaken at behest of the Antichrist. The ultimate intent was to bring about Armageddon, cloaking it behind UFOs. Some within the Air Force believed that the ultimate aim of aliens was to deliberately engineer an all-destructive third and final world war, and when the carnage was over, some kind of soul harvesting would begin. This parallels the experiences of both Tammy Stone and Judy Doherty in the sense that both women underwent abduction experiences in which part of them, their soul or spirit, was somehow detached from their physical body and transported to another location, to the interior of a UFO from another world, or as others saw, as a craft of masquerading demons. Whitley Strieber stated that one of his correspondents who had a particularly distressing encounter with a non-human creature wrote, "It was looking at me as if it was hungry, and I got the idea that it wanted to eat my soul." John E. Mack also uncovered another abductee, Isabel. Mack noted she recalled vividly waking up once in the middle of night to find one of the creatures right next to her bed and another one bending over her trying to bring up as much fear in her as possible. She knew instinctively that whatever that thing was next to her wanted to enter her. Mack added she felt certain that these things, certain that what these beings were after is the human soul. This is because they don't possess a soul, because they can't just take our souls. They cannot come into this world physically, but they can fool you into handing it over. Barbara Bartolik, through her research, work with over 200 cases, had learned enough to formulate her own interpretation of such experiences. She believed that at least a certain group of these beings in some way feed off of our emotions, especially the strong ones that come from fear, pain, depression, and compulsive actions. Aliens or emotional vampires was a very strange thought. According to the U.S. government's own investigations, Aleister Crowley, Jack Parsons, and L. Ron Hubbard were responsible for the UFO explosion. A gateway for the great old ones has already been established and opened by members of the OTO who are in rapport with this entity, Lamb, an extraterrestrial being whom Crowley supposedly contacted while in America in 1919. This is Kenneth Grant of the OTO. He took over after Aleister Crowley died. Aleister Crowley, born in 1875 in Leamington, England, was raised in a Christian household. His father, Edward, a preacher of the Plymouth Brethren, 1881, the Crowley family moved to Red Hill, Surrey, and young Crowley attended evangelist school. He wanted to become a chemist, but became interested in religious studies and developed a passion for alchemy and magic. In 1898, that interest led to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, a magical order in Great Britain that practiced sorcery and spiritual development. He moved in with Alan Bennett, a member of the Golden Dawn, under his guidance, began to experiment with ritual magic. Crowley inherited his father's fortune and quickly became a 33rd degree Mason. The Amalantra working in 1918 involved hashish and mescaline and achieved an altered state of consciousness where Crowley made contact with an interdimensional being known as Lamb, who looked like a gray alien. He didn't view Lamb as an alien or a demon. He called him an Enochian entity from the Enochian call, a Kabbalistic language devised by 17th century and Queen Elizabeth magician Dr. John Dee. He and his scryer Edward Kelly had their very own strange experience with what they termed little men who moved in a little fiery cloud. Crowley set things in motion for what was to follow. The culprit, someone who dared Crowley, or dared what Crowley feared to do. On June 17, 1952, South Orange Grove Avenue in Pasadena, California, a house with a laboratory packed with chemicals and scientific tools exploded. The blaze terrified and caused the neighbors to run panicked into the streets. Thinking it was an attack, Jack Parsons died at 5:45 p.m. at Pasadena's Huntington Memorial Hospital. He was working to summon entities from the demonic realm. Rumor is he made a deal with Lucifer to further his power and influence and to gain a place in his ranks. He proclaimed himself to be the Antichrist. Kenneth Grant made some astounding inferences about Parsons' Babylon working. He writes that the working began in 1945, a few months before Crowley's death in 1947, and just prior to the wave of the unexplained aerial phenomena now recalled as the Great Flying Saucer Flap. Parsons opened a door and something flew in. This is his own words. Marvel Whiteside Parsons for his achievements. A large crater on the far side of the moon is named after him. And every year on Halloween, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory hosts a memorial with mannequins of Parsons and the Suicide Squad, known as Nativity Day. Within the aerospace community, it's still a joke that JPL stands for Jack Parsons Laboratory or Jack Parsons Lives. Disciples of Crowley and someone who rivaled even Crowley himself, who engaged in bestiality with the family dog, inappropriate relations with his own mother. Before each rocket test, Parsons would undertake a ritual to try to invoke the Greek god Pan. In 1942, Crowley chose Parsons to lead the Agape Lodge and the Thelemic Ordo Templi Orientis in California. After Crowley expelled Wilford Smith, he practiced Crowley's Thelemic rituals. The goal was the creation of a new hybrid being. If successful, would be the destruction of Christianity. So what the Babylon working ritual actually entailed is they were trying to create a moonchild and bring about the Antichrist. Much of JPL's initial rocket research took place at the Devil's Gate Dam in Los Angeles. JPL was established at this location in 1930 by the California Institute of Technology. The group became known as the Suicide Squad. The dam constructed a decade earlier looked as if it was a title from Devil's Gate Gorge, rocky outcropping that resembled a demonic face. As Parsons was working at the Devil's Gate, another person in the early U.S. rocket research, Robert Goddard, was making advancements in the same field. Goddard had a long-standing relationship to New Mexico's town of Roswell and knew quite a bit about Parsons, a site unbeknownst to him that had previously been used by the rocketry pioneer Robert Goddard. Students of Parsons' work believe that the portal Crowley opened in 1918, summoning Lamb, was further expanded by Parsons and Hubbard in the 40s, particularly with the Babylon working. Parsons' actions reached their tipping point, and pilots Kenneth Arnold had a historic UFO encounter in Mount Rainier, Washington, followed a little more than a week later by the most infamous crash outside of Roswell, New Mexico. Days after this encounter, Arnold said that he had been contacted by a Texas preacher who warned him that flying saucers were harbingers of doomsday, and he was readying his congregation for the end of the world. Interesting side note, conspiracy researcher John Judge stated in an interview on KPFK Radio, Los Angeles, August 12, 1989, Kenneth Arnold and Jack Parsons were flying buddies. So a little more than a week after Kenneth Arnold's experience, something crashed in the desert of Lincoln County, New Mexico, not far from Roswell. Jesse Marcel, an intelligence officer for the 509th Bomber Group at Roswell Airfield in 1947, who saw, handled, and collected some of the remains of the object at the crash site itself, the Foster Ranch stated, "I saw a lot of wreckage, but no complete machine. It had disintegrated before it hit the ground. The wreckage was scattered over an area about 3/4 of a mile long and several hundred feet wide. I was pretty well acquainted with most everything that was in the air at the time, both ours and foreign. I was also acquainted with virtually every type of weather observation or radar tracking device being used by either the civilians or military. What it was, we didn't know. We just picked up the fragments. It could not be bent or broken, or even dented by a 16-pound sledgehammer." Author and researcher Adam Gorightly, who carefully studied the lives and work of Crowley and Parsons, stated, "After the Babylon working, UFO sightings began to be reported simultaneously, like the devil's floodgate had been opened, and in flew demonic powers from beyond like an H.P. Lovecraft nightmare unleashed upon the human race." Crowley said this about the Enochian entities, "Be careful, they bite." Major Sam Bruno of the U.S. Air Force advised that the FBI that they have files on Parsons, including some related to his relationship with Crowley. One which dated May 17th of 1948 stated, "A religious cult believed to advocate sexual perversion was organized at the subject's home, which had been reported subversive. At one point, the police heard neighbors reports of a ritual in which a new pregnant woman jumped 9 times through a fire in the yard and came to investigate, but Parsons put them off by emphasizing his scientific credentials." The same document referred U.S. Air Force FBI knowledge of the Church at Thelema, explaining this cult broadly hinted at free love, that there had been several complaints of strange going on at the home, and that an unnamed source had described the church as a gathering place of perverts. Military records also noted that in 1943, Parsons was interviewed by the FBI and stated that the Church of Thelema was a lodge and a fraternity, as well as a church, and that they studied philosophy as well as religion and attempted to inform themselves concerning all types and kinds of religion. Major Sam Bruno had a meeting with Parsons after Kenneth Arnold's sighting, and their talk of Parsons being linked into this to Arnold and undertaking some special digging, he uncovered that Parsons, Arnold, had personal contact, having mutual acquaintances. This was enough for someone in Bruno's office to see that Parsons seen as a sorcerer, knew the man who encountered flying saucers in 1947 and started it. The Air Force also had reports of Parsons knowing Robert Goddard out at Roswell. We knew something happened at Roswell with the crash in 47. People in the OSI said it had to mean something that Jack was linked with Kenneth Arnold and Robert Goddard. Parsons declared that UFOs would play a part in converting the world into Crowleyanity. Parsons' interest in flying saucers made it more terrifying. The AFOSI planned a meeting with Parsons and asked him if the things that he, Crowley, and Hubbard were attempting to bring in entities like Crowley's Lamb. Parsons admitted there probably was a connection. The UFO wave of 1947 was linked to his door-opening rituals, and that it was no coincidence that he knew Arnold or Goddard of Roswell. Material on Parsons was secured by the staff. It was noted with concern that Charles Taze Russell, a prominent Christian restorationist minister from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the founder of what is now known as the Bible Student Movement, from which the Jehovah's Witnesses emerged, had once made a prediction that the countdown to the end of the world would begin on October 2nd, 1914. John Carter, a biographer of the Jack Parsons, noted, "It is ironic John Parsons, who would later attempt to incarnate the Babylon, would also sign an oath stating that he was the Antichrist, was born the very same day of Russell's end times event for the U.S. military." This was deeply disturbing. So as you can see, Jack Parsons was in fact born on that date. Many of Crowley and Parsons' experiences occurred while in an altered state of mind. An unsettling conclusion was that successfully accessing the world of UFO and intelligences and understanding their true point of origin and intent was more likely to be achieved by opening the mind to new experiences and realms than by monitoring the skies with radar and fighter jets. They reasoned that invading their space remotely, even in astral form, might provide results. This originated in the early 1950s with the UFO contactees George Van Tassel, George Adamski, and George Hunt Williamson, who the military believed were being visited by occult entities instead of ETs. Elements within the U.S. government focused the investigations of the ESP, Ouija, and the paranormal in the early 50s. Dr. Nelson Pacheco, who served in the U.S. Air Force for 21 years and retired in 1987 as a lieutenant colonel, and U.S. Air Force radio intercept analyst Tommy Bland, in their book Unmasking the Enemy, stated, "The CIA began infiltrating seances and the occult gathering during the 50s. A memo dated April 9, 1953 refers to a domestic and illegal operation that required planting of observers at a seance in order to obtain surveillance of individuals attending the meetings. Elements within the Army and the CIA had deep interest in the subject and trying to determine if the use of ESP and even Ouija boards could help resolve understanding of the UFO presence. February 1954, the CIA published a 27-page document titled A History of Ouija and Intelligence Applications that demonstrated the agency was trying to determine if Ouija boards might be useful tools for espionage. Colonel Edward Streber of the U.S. Air Force, an uncle of Whitley Strieber, told the author of Communion that in the late 1940s, the Air Force had undertaken a secret study that concluded the ability of the otherworldly entities to interact with us in this world depended on whether we believed in them or accepted them. The survival of these artificially intelligent beings is what they want. The Greys and any physical existence they can reassemble from the DNA codes they bear on behalf of their makers, cannot enter the state after death. They cannot be born, and they do not have a soul. They are attempting to use us as a portal through soul implanting their systems into us by genetic experimentation and implementation to tap into everlasting life through us. Many experts in alien abductions have weighed in on aliens and soul manipulation. Willie Strieber concludes that they had the power to control the soul. Dr. Johnny Mack wrote in Abduction and Passports to the Cosmos, "Greg, a patient of Mack, spoke of an invasion. Not with the Greys. Greg encountered a tall reptilian. He believed that they were attempting to separate his consciousness from his body. This is a video of Bob Lazar talking about the human soul as containers, is what the aliens refer to us.
These beings conveyed information about the capability of affecting the human brain to anesthetize the human body. These beings said that man was the product of externally corrected evolution. They said that man, as a species, had been genetically altered 65 times. They refer to humans as containers, yet I don't know what we're containers of.
At least one of them was part of an archaeological dig. So it's old. At least one of them is old. I don't know if it was the one I worked on, but I remember something to do with an archaeological dig.
Whoa.
So that's that means it's not just old, it's ancient.
That's a freak out right there. Just a couple of dudes with some brushes looking for a Tyrannosaurus Rex bone. They hit metal.
That was Bob Lazar talking about one of the nine craft out at Area 51 at S4. He said that according to the paperwork that he read on that actual craft, that it was found at an archaeological dig and it didn't know exactly where or how long ago. The big secret is that aliens are fascinated with human souls. They supposedly use the human spirit in ways that the U.S. government doesn't completely comprehend, or that they do, and they don't want to tell the rest of us. So, Nigel Kerner believed that the alien activity is motivated by the need to feed on human souls. His two books, Songs of the Greys and The Grey Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, gives a compelling case that aliens use the human soul in many ways. Nigel concludes the following. The Greys are sophisticated, self-aware machines created by a long-vanished extraterrestrial civilization, I would say elder race or fallen angels, in an attempt to create vessels for their offspring, the Nephilim, in other words, a body for them to inhabit. Explains how their request to capture human souls appears in the historical records from biblical times. Explains how the phenomena of racism is a byproduct of their genetic tampering, like Blavatsky's root race theory and the secret doctrine that Hitler and Himmler latched onto, being the descendants of the Aryans. Kerner suggests that the Greys are seeking to master death by obtaining something the humans possess that they don't, souls. Through the manipulation of human DNA, these aliens hope to create their own souls. In other words, they are trying to bypass God's judgment. That is their attempt, because these entities were never sanctioned by God, and they were created by fallen angels with human women. The reason that he never sanctioned them is the very reason why they are trying to attach themselves somehow to our human souls. And this is a document that you can find on the FBI website, referred to as Document 6751, and you can easily look this up online. And if you have never seen this document, I highly suggest that you all go online and look at it and read it for yourselves. This is a little brief synopsis of what it says in the document. We've been visited by beings from another dimension. FBI document 6751, a declassified document by the FBI dated July 8, 1947, reads, a memorandum of importance. This memo is respectfully addressed to certain scientists of distinction, to important aeronautical military authorities, to a number of public officials, and to a few publications. A very serious situation may develop at any time with regard to the flying saucers. If one of these should be attacked, the attacking plane will almost certainly be destroyed. In the public mind, this might create near panic and international suspicion. The principal data concerning these craft now at hand must be offered, no matter how fantastic and unintelligible it may seem to minds not previously instructed in thinking of this type. Down here in the middle section, they have little bullet points. One, part of the disc carry crews. Others are under remote control. So even back then in 1947, Some of these craft were drones. Their mission is peaceful. The visitors contemplate settling on this plane. 3, the visitors are human-like, but much larger in size. Like a Nephilim, talks like a Nephilim, might be a Nephilim. Could be. They are not excarnate Earth people, but come from their own world. They do not come from any planet, as we use the word, but from an etheric planet. It's funny, because that's what J. Allen Hynek was saying. They come from the astral plane, but come from their own world. And then 6, the bodies of these visitors and the craft also automatically materialize on entering the vibratory rate of our dense matter. 7, the discs possess a type of radiant energy or a ray which is easily disintegrate any attacking ship. They re-enter the etheric at will and so simply disappear from our vision without trace. 8, the region from which they come is not the astral plane, but corresponds to the lokas, talas. Students of esoteric matters will understand these terms. That's very interesting to have on a U.S. government document. Have that on there. They probably cannot be reached by radio, but probably can be by radar if a signal system can be devised for that apparatus. Let the newcomers be treated with every kindness. Lokas or talas is a concept in Hindu mythology that refers to alternate worlds or realities, and in the simplest context, multiple dimensions. These words are explained in the Vedas and later expanded in theosophy. This is a video from 1906 to 2014, all the UFOs, and you're going to see a pattern here. And most of the countries where they do satanic ritual abuse, as well as into the esoteric and occult, are some of the most highly densely populated UFO activity. So that is my presentation. I hope that you all have found it very edifying. And this message is not just for Christians. It's for unbelievers as well. I want anyone who looks into the UFO field and any of the esoteric and occult stuff to seriously look at the information that I'm providing here so that you see that these things are truly of Satan. And that it's not too late for you to accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. And I encourage you that if you've not done so, let that day be today in Christ Jesus. Thank you, y'all.
Thank you, brother.
Amen. That's good stuff right there. Because part of this end time deception is going to be these fallen angels and their offspring of pretending to be from other galaxies far, far away, which we know is nonsense, but most of the world has embraced this lie. And isn't it interesting that, you know, that illustration there of how the United States was lit up more than any other place in the world lets you know how deep and dark that our country has become in the area of dabbling in the occult and Satan and demons. And our government has led the way. You know, they've led the way.